people getting shot at the checkpoint, just like how they do in Palestine, and now they have it in Iraq.
So obviously, Mr. Bremer was an early believer that the United States was not a country, but represented a homeland.
Friends from childhood stopped being my friends because they're so convinced that I came from this tradition of terrorism.
The first sign of fundamentalism is failure of imagination. As soon as you want it black and white, you know there's no imagination.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Wednesday, May 7th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. The Bush administration bombed nearly every telephone switching station in Iraq during the invasion. The idea was to shut down the communications infrastructure of Iraq, making it more difficult for officials in Saddam Hussein's regime to communicate with each other. With the telephone switching centers gone, Iraqis can only make telephone calls within their own neighborhood, making it difficult to do business and making it impossible for many people to speak with their families. From Baghdad, Aaron Glantz has more.
Cars speed by what remains of the main telephone switching center in the Adamiya section of Baghdad. The rubble is 20 feet high in parts, with iron rods sticking out of stray cinder blocks every which way. A group of children from the neighborhood wrestling club climb amongst the wreckage. This telephone switching center was bombed three times by a total of six American missiles. Saif is 18.
We were sleeping in the house, and our house was the third house down. Six houses have been destroyed, and the others are filled with cracks.
The bombings have affected everyone in the neighborhood. Alhan al-Rashid lives nearby.
I have cried so much. And our glass in our house was broken because of the bombing of this station of the telephone. Because my house is near the station.
Al-Rashid is also chief of pediatrics at El Ubaidi Hospital in Sadr City, a poor, predominantly Shiite section of Baghdad. In Iraq today, no one can communicate by telephone. That means none of the public services are connected, including the hospitals. So when a person gets hurt, it's impossible for them to call an ambulance.
It is very difficult to contact patients. The people came by themselves to the hospital. And if they need ambulance, they send somebody to take the ambulance to their homes.
So residents of Baghdad are constantly checking their cars to make sure they're working in case they need to make a trip to the hospital. And because the streets of Baghdad are filled with looters and gunmen at night, many people here are afraid to make the trip at all. The lack of phone lines isn't only affecting public services, though. Few Iraqis have been able to contact their relatives.
My daughter lives in Emirates, in Sharjah. My daughter, Sura Qalamchi. She is just married now.
Mm. When was her wedding?
It was in January.
So right before the war. Did you go?
No.
And have you been able to telephone her?
No, I couldn't telephone her because it is very difficult now. I haven't heard her voice since about 3 months.
What would you say to her if you had her on the phone right now?
I would tell her congratulations on your pregnancy, and I hope I will be a grandmother very soon.
Because the telephone switching stations were bombed, it is impossible to call other parts of Iraq. But it is possible to get an international phone line using a satellite telephone. Few Iraqis can afford the more than $800 it takes to buy one, so they line up and pay $1.50 a minute to use one on the street. 9-year-old Adra stands on a main street in downtown Baghdad, talking to her sister in the United Arab Emirates. Her father has only bought her 1 minute for this conversation, so there's not much time to talk.
My mother greets you, and when will you come back? That's all.
The American Army has done little to restore the phone service here. This man sells tea nearby the Adamiya telephone station, which was bombed by the Americans. Like other residents of the neighborhood, he says no American officials have ever visited the wreckage of the telephone tower.
All movement in Baghdad is paralyzed. All movement. The industrial, the commercial, and even the professional. And the telephone lines are very important because they're the heartbeat of life.
For Pacifica's Peace Watch, I'm Aaron Glantz with Ahmed Al-Rawi in Baghdad, Iraq.
In a new audio tape, the first allegedly made by Saddam Hussein since U.S. forces invaded Iraq and ousted his regime from power, the deposed Hussein urges his countrymen to fight foreign occupation. The Sydney Morning Herald received the tape from two men in Baghdad on Monday. An exhausted voice believed to be Saddam Hussein said, quote, "Through this secret means, I am talking to you from inside Great Iraq," unquote. He went on to note some Iraqis celebrated his 66th birthday, even though he was not in power. White House spokesperson Ari Fleischer says, "We don't know if the tape is genuine or not. We don't know if he's alive or not." Retired General Jay Garner, who had been appointed Iraq's chief civil administrator, has been replaced by former Foreign Service officer L. Paul Bremer, a former diplomat equally close to the Bush administration, but with a reputation for being blunt. It's predicted Garner will be out and Bremer in just a matter of weeks, a political stroke designed to broker a truce between the warring factions within the Bush administration. The State Department and the Defense Department each have presented rival agendas for running Iraq. Bremer is the former ambassador at large for counterterrorism under Reagan, but his foreign service has never included a stint in the Middle East. He's a close friend of Secretary of War Donald Rumsfeld, and despite his history with the State Department, will report directly to the Pentagon. Former National Security Agency officer Wayne Mattson offers this perspective on Bremer's new appointment as Chief Civilian Administrator of Iraq.
Paul Jerry Bremer has just been appointed as the head of civil administration for Iraq, replacing retired General Jay Garner. Before anyone starts celebrating the fact that Bremer, because of his long history and career as a State Department Foreign Service officer, will be representing the more moderate policies of Colin Powell, should be aware that Bremer is more closely aligned with the neoconservatives who are found in the Pentagon. Bremer, whose academic career mirrors that of President Bush, he received a BA from Yale and an MBA from Harvard, is a darling of the neoconservatives because he basically agrees with many of their tenets. As with the people who backed the Project for a New American Century, like William Kristol, Richard Perle, Paul Wolfowitz, Doug Feith, and Donald Rumsfeld, Bremer, in 1996, called for President Clinton to use force against Libya, Syria, Iran, and Sudan. His 1996 Wall Street Journal article coincided with a letter sent to President Clinton by the group that would become known later on as the neoconservatives or neocons. Posted in Afghanistan and succeeding his friend Robert Oakley in the State Department Office of Counterterrorism during the Reagan administration, Bremer became an ambassador at large for counterterrorism until the end of the Reagan administration. He then went to work for Kissinger Associates as a managing director from 1989 to 2000. During that time, that put him in the same circle of friends that were negotiating an oil pipeline deal with the Taliban. That was Robert Oakley, Henry Kissinger, and President Bush's special envoy to both Afghanistan and Iraq, Zalmay Khalilzad. Bremer chaired a National Commission on Terrorism chartered by Congress, and that commission was pushed by then-Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. In 1999, he began talking about potential terrorist threats, and he pretty much latched onto the doomsdayer-type feelings when he said that a radioactive release in Lake Michigan would make the waterfront of Chicago uninhabitable for 50 years. In 2000, Bremer became a chairman of a branch of the firm Marsh & McLennan. It's too bad that with all of his prognostications about terrorist attacks, Mr. Bremer didn't warn his own company about what might happen because 300 employees of Marsh & McLennan were killed in a terrorist attack against the World Trade Center on September 11th. Bremer was also co-chairman of a Heritage Foundation report called Defending the American Homeland, that was released in early 2002. Bremer's obvious links with people like Henry Kissinger, the Heritage Foundation, and other conservative think tanks puts him basically in the same camp as the neoconservatives. His replacement for Garner might have more to do with the current scurrying for special contracts and favors in post-war Iraq. Jay Garner was actually on loan from a company called L3 Communications. L3 owns a company called MPRI, Military Professional Resources Incorporated. MPRI, of course, is now looking to get the contracts to retrain the Iraqi army and provide all sorts of military and law enforcement services for Iraq. The fact that Garner will be out and Bremer will be in means that obviously L3 can pursue those contracts without any sort of conflicts of interest issues being raised. Paul Bremer actually was also part of the preliminary group of thinkers who were always warning about a potential for a terrorist attack against the United States. When he chaired the Congressional Committee on Terrorism, we first started hearing the term homeland security. So obviously, Mr. Bremer was an early believer that the United States was not a country but represented a homeland, and he began to create all sorts of scenarios to justify putting more and more resources into counterterrorism security in general. His new appointment as the civil administrator for Iraq is just a long continuation, a continuation of his past interests in pursuing the national security agenda for both the Reagan administration and now the Bush second administration.
Wayne Mattson is former National Security Agency officer under the Reagan administration and co-author of America's Nightmare, The Presidency of George Bush II. Yesterday, Senators Dick Durbin of Illinois, John Sununu of New Hampshire, and Ross Feingold of Wisconsin introduced a bipartisan resolution condemning bigotry and violence against Arab Americans, Muslim Americans, South Asian Americans, and Sikh Americans. According to an FBI report, the number of anti-Muslim incidents rose 1,600% from 2000 to 2001, largely due to the post-September 11th backlash. Aisha Kazmi is a Muslim American. Since September 11th, she's lost friends and been treated with contempt and suspicion because of her religion. Last weekend, she spoke about her experiences at a conference held at the University of Massachusetts in Boston entitled War on Terrorism or Assault on Human Rights.
I want to share a story with you about what happened to me on the day of 9/11. I'm a student here at UMass. And I had class at 10 o'clock that morning, so I arrived here at school, I'd say about 9:15, and I went into the Quinn Administration Building, and I got myself a cup of coffee from the cafeteria. And when I walked out, I noticed that there was a crowd of people standing in front of the television monitor just outside of the bookstore. And I was thinking, you know, what happened? Did someone get injured? What's going on? And I walked over there, and I saw everyone looking up, and I looked up at the television monitor, and there it was. I saw both of the buildings on fire, and someone had told me that there were two planes that hit, one in each building. And I was astounded. And pretty soon after that, I found out that the Pentagon had also been hit, and there were some reports about possibly the White House being on fire or something or the other. I went to class a little late that day, as I think a lot of people did. When I got to class, people were chit-chatting about, well, not chit-chatting, but were freaking out about what happened. Some people didn't know, people were sort of talking about how they felt. And this was before the professor actually arrived to class. There was a woman who was sitting in the classroom, and she actually stood up and stood in the front of the classroom facing everyone, and, you know, she said, well, this is because of the Muslims in the world. The Muslims have done this to us. And mind you, this was before there was any suspicions of anything that was let out. It was probably about 10:15 in the morning at this point. And she then asked the question, what is it that we should do about these Muslims in the world? They're making our lives increasingly difficult. And I sat there in complete shock. And those of you who know me know that I'm not the type of person who just sits there and takes something like that. But I wasn't able to say anything that morning because the shock was double, actually. The first shock being of, you know, God, what happened in New York? I can't believe this. I was born here. I grew up here. I go to New York all the time. I'm in Boston. And then the other shock was of being blamed for what happened. People say often that the Muslims are insensitive to the, you know, Americans because of what happened to what happened on September 11th, for example. People who had friends or family members died in either the plane or one of the planes or the buildings. But I want to ask, you all, how is it that Muslims can be insensitive to that when a lot of us knew people who were either in the planes or in the buildings? I actually knew two people who died that day, one of which was a cousin of mine who was in the building, and the other one was a woman I grew up with who was on the plane. There's absolutely no way we can be insensitive to that. But on top of it, there is this collective blame that we have to take responsibility for some reason. My anger at this point has gotten to this almost sometimes extreme level, where many times when I'm walking around outside with my friends or my cousins or my mother, I almost feel like I'm walking around with my fists up just in case. It's really terrible that I have to walk around like this, because I know at times I might be looked at the wrong way, and it causes me to look at other people the wrong way. This is how we brothers and sisters in humanity have become as a result. We've become divided amongst ourselves, and I just want to remind you all that divide and conquer is definitely not passé. And I wonder to myself often, is this what the Patriot Act was designed to do? Was it to divide us further so that a few people sitting at the top can get their way in the world? But then I try to remind myself of this idealism that my friend Mary had. This feeling, this inner heart that, no, people are not like this. Humanity cannot do this to one another. It's just not that way. But then I start having my friends from childhood stop being my friends because they're so convinced by this myth that I grew up, that I came from this tradition of terrorism, or that I find out late, you know, just a couple months ago, that one of my childhood mentors is this beautiful and peaceful woman whose house I used to go to all the time to play with her birds and teach them how to speak or clip their wings so that we could train them to sit on her shoulders, is now on the FBI's most wanted list because she supposedly has links to Al-Qaeda. It's become really difficult for me to hold on to this idealism. And the direction that humanity is currently taking by supporting these wars, the war on terror, the war in Iraq, Iraqi Operation Iraqi Freedom, where immeasurable suffering is taking place and deaths have occurred, or that even at home, my dignity or the dignity and the honor of my family and my friends have been compromised so that America can be safe. Unfortunately, this hopelessness and this lack of idealism about humanity has become characteristic of the Muslims in this country and in the rest of the world. That has been the terrible outcome of this.
Aisha Kazmi is a Muslim American. She spoke at the University of Massachusetts in Boston last weekend. Special thanks to Mark Weaver for preparing that piece. Hip-hop, a culture that had its roots in the 1970s in the South Bronx and soon spread to other disenfranchised communities, not only in the United States but throughout the world, has been a voice of resistance and freedom for youth and, more importantly, youth of color. One producer of rap music, Fred Reck, has used his talents and connections in the hip-hop industry to educate and activate his audience, using famous rappers as a storytellers for lessons in American foreign policy and its effects in the Middle East and closer to home. He recently completed a song entitled Down With Us, which showcases famous rappers such as Everlast, Daz Dillinger, Dilated Peoples, and others. They came together to share a critical message with youth regarding the war on terrorism through the medium of hip-hop. Rex spoke recently with Michael Slade of Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles.
Well, it's a song that we have put together with some of the artists that I work with. We call it the STOP Movement, which stands for Stop the Oppressive Politics. Basically a compilation of everybody's views on what's been going on with the policies that have been put out there by the government and some of the propaganda that's been talked about by George Bush and the government. So we just wanted, each artist had his view on what's been going on with everything in the world. So we decided to get together and, you know, do a song about it.
Who are some of the people that are on it?
We had Everlast starting it off and ending it. Everybody knows him as Whitey Ford, of course. Defari, he's one of the members of the Alcoholics. J-Ro from the Alcoholics. Trey D from the Eastsiders, one of Snoop Dogg's groups. Superfly, he's one of a talented musician and producer. He's produced stuff for Tupac, Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre. RBX, everybody knows RBX from Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg Records. The Dilated Peoples, Daz Dillinger. Dub C from West Side Connection. The Mac Minister. If I left anybody out, don't be mad at me. It's called Down With Us, but it kind of has like a double meaning right. to it. So,
what made you do it? What made you want to do it?
I don't know. I never really felt, you know, too political about certain things before all this stuff had happened. But, I mean, I just don't think I'm stupid. I just watch the news and see what's going on. And it's like every day they come out with something, and the next day it's like something else. And it's like after a while you're like, you know, when is a lie? When are you guys going to stop lying? What is the real truth? You know what I mean? And, you know, they want everybody to follow the UN resolutions, and, you know, they only want to follow, they only want people to follow what UN resolutions, what countries they want the countries to follow the UN resolutions. You know what I mean? If it's their friend, then, you know, they just kind of backseat them and say, okay, well, we'll cover you guys. We'll, you know, we'll veto anything that goes to you guys. But when it comes to their interest, you know, they want to go after countries, you know, for violating UN resolutions. But then they want to violate international law and just go do it on their own without, you know, without the permission of the permissions of the rest of the countries of the world. So after a while, you're just like watching all this stuff unfold, and it's like, man, what are you guys doing? You know what you say. First, they say it's because it is because it's weapons of mass destruction, because they're connected to terrorism, and every time they try to prove something, it's been you know, fabricated, and they lie about it, they change their story, and I don't think the people are getting the real deal of what they, you know, going out there to take the country over for.
Now, one thing I'd like to say real quick is just so people know that you yourself are Palestinian, right?
Yeah, Palestinian American, born in Flint, Michigan, with like Michael Moore.
Uh-huh. And did that have, you know, watching what goes on in Palestine, what's been happening in Palestine, how is that? Did that have any impact on you wanting to do this song?
It did, because I got a chance to visit out there, and I was just amazed on the atrocities. I mean, not so much the atrocities that everybody else sees, but the day-to-day atrocities of just somebody waving a machine gun in your face, you know, 3 or 4 times a day just because you're a certain race. You know what I mean? And just how they let how the people are treated out there and oppressed out there is just incredible. And it's under the hands of our government too. You know, all the tanks, all the weaponry that they use out there is paid for by our government, by us people, and now it's going to be the same thing going on over in this country. Now they got checkpoints, and people getting shot at the checkpoint, just like how they do in Palestine, and now they have it in Iraq, and it's just like an ongoing thing that keeps going on and on and on, and our country just doesn't learn a lesson by it.
Gangbang, but y'all the real f***ing gangsters. Hanged us and raped us and chased us and faced us. So I don't give a bad f*** if this flame up. We ain't been a fit, win, lose, or draw. When they swear to protect us but abuse the law. Claim equality, they policy to fool us all. While the military steady, stay moving wrong in the ghetto.
No war when people all around us are starving and homeless. What is Bush focused on? Must be his father's old grudges. The schools need money, man, they f***ing off the budgets. Or more tomahawks and penitentiaries. The devil's propaganda creates enemies. Now they pumping war in the Middle East. And this sh** got me thinking, who's really the beast?
people always talking about gangsta rap. Now Bush talk about where all my gangsters at. Somebody called Don King. Bush and Saddam need to take it to the ring and do the damn thing. They already talk about rebuilding their cities. I roll around the hood and it still looks sh. It's all about the loot. Grab the gun and show peace to my brother Will and the rest of the troops.
The temperature's rising, about to boil. I'm not bamboozled, it's all about the oil. I sit back and watch they plots and schemes, tangled up strings to a puppet regime. So now it's on who, like, what, where, when. Get your mind right, I truly recommend. Too much information, CNN. They told me that Bush trained in a deadly combination to a wicked quest. And it's true that the rooster comes home to nest.
There's a war going on outside. Yeah, I just can't understand, but then again I do. Lord God, forgive a nigga for the sin I do. This shit super not stupid, I could read the signs. With evil defines a motherfucker out for wealth and ways of stealth. Bombers, fake talk to calm us down. We can't rise when the fall is now. Innocent die, enormous rounds fall out the sky from an army hellbound and headed by one clown.
Nowhere to hide, nowhere to run. When the sins of the father fall on the son. The bigger the problem, the bigger the gun.
Can look road wired, what the government's done. Out of the trenches, jump over fences, clear park benches. Who want test this? Life is here, boy, ready for teach. Put my life on the line, the youth them want eat. Big bad and bold, out of control. Paint the White House in a red, green and gold. Fling out George Bush and make the good times roll. And teach all the youth them what's never been told.
What is the world coming to? True domination, frustration, war on someone's altercation. My motivation towards peace, the violence needs to cease.
But how can you say that when you go with the weak streets?
It's a difference between suckers and buster, a child and his mother. But what can I say towards the other? Dad's down with the movement, telling them let's do this for the people, for ourselves. We gotta stay true to what we believe in. It's true world domination for all colors and all other races. Now what I see, Bush, they after the oil. It's a big dope sack for him and his father to bump.
I declare war, and you have the right to bear arms, but no weapons of mass destruction.
What?
Who are you to tell me what size bombs I could drop when my enemies threaten me with harm? What's a combat? They violated the rules of war. It's no rules in killing or dying, therefore, y'all, I ain't fighting this there war. I ain't dying over there on that land, that's their soul.
War is life, yes, and war is death. War don't decide who's right, but who's left. I fight every day, so I ain't spitting on soldiers. But this war's for oil, for religion and culture. Big business dollars and family honor. Half world domination, half family drama. The media just turns Saddam to Osama. Raqqa, assalamu alaikum, peace be upon us.
Peace ain't no peace, the killing ain't cease. As long as you get a peace, I'ma carry my peace. Miss America, oh say, can you see in front of you? I'm a West Side gang related POW.
The song Down With Us, which can be downloaded from the internet at Fred Reck's website, www.fredreck.com. Reck was interviewed by Michael Slate of Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles. Special thanks also to editors and co-producer Fidel Rodriguez and Christine Blasdale. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. When we come back, a discussion with three people who have a rather unique definition of patriotism. We'll be back in a moment.